This is Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. It may be hard to believe, but Election Day is almost here. Voters in Vermont will elect a new governor and a new lieutenant governor, and there are other statewide and legislative races as well. What are some of the key factors in these contests? Today on Vermont Edition, we've got a group of some of Vermont's best political reporters to look at these races. With us are Terry Hallenbeck of 7 Days, Neil Goswami, who is bureau chief at the Vermont Press Bureau, and VPR's Pete Hirschfeld. Welcome back. Great to have you all here today.
Good to
Thanks,
be here.
Bob. Thanks for having us, Bob.
And you can join the conversation here at Vermont Edition. Give us a call at 1-800-639-2211. What are your thoughts about campaign 2016 in Vermont? Have the candidates addressed your concerns and your top priorities? Are you still an undecided voter? If you are, we would love to hear from you today and learn what the factors will be to help you make up your mind. Maybe you're a voter who likes to split their ticket. You vote for the presidential candidate of one party and perhaps the gubernatorial candidate of the other party. Give us a call and let us know why. 1-800-639-2211. You can always send us an email at vermontedition@vpr.net. But better yet, give us a call at 1-800-639-2211. You know, it seemed that for many months, the presidential race was overshadowing many of the Vermont races, including the contest for governor. But it does seem like in the last few weeks, the gubernatorial race has really taken hold. So what are your general thoughts about the way this race has unfolded with Democrat Sue Minter, Republican Phil Scott, and Liberty Union candidate Bill Lee? How have these candidates tried to appeal to voters? What's their basic message? Terry, what do you think?
Well, I do think that the governor's race is still overshadowed by the presidential. Like, there's just so much energy consumed in the country by the presidential race right now that a lot of people are still not paying attention. But those of us who are, it has been a fairly peaceful campaign, though it did feel like in your debate last night that it's sort of ramping up in its tone. And there's been these negative ads out there too. But so the Republican Lieutenant Governor Phil Scott trying to send a message of we can't afford to pursue new initiatives akin to those that the current administration under Governor Shumlin has pursued for the last 6 years. While former Transportation Secretary Sue Minter on the Democratic side is trying to say we must in order to continue to have an affordable state pursue some of these ideas such as paid family leave, renewable energy, et cetera. And then Liberty Union candidate Bill Lee has not distinguished himself as being entirely focused on policy.
Neil, what are your thoughts about this race?
Yeah, I mean, I think Terry's right on track there. Phil Scott's tried to maintain his focus on this affordability issue that he's been talking about for the entire campaign. Sue Minter and some of her Democratic allies have tried to knock him off message by raising the abortion issue and really focusing on that, preventing him from talking about his message. And whether or not that is successful, we will find out on Tuesday evening. But, you know, there are really two messages here that we're hearing from the candidates, as Terry said. One is we can't afford to do anything new. And the other is that it's imperative that we do something new because we have too many college kids struggling with tuition, too many parents struggling with early childhood care. And, you know, you have these competing mindsets in Vermont, and I'm not sure that there's any clear consensus on the right path forward.
And Pete, how much of a shadow does Peter Shumlin have in this election?
You have to assume that the personal experiences of voters with state government, either directly or by observation over the past 6 years, are going to inform their thinking heading into the polls on Tuesday. I'm not sure that people who are upset with the way Peter Shumlin has conducted himself in office or the policies he's implemented are necessarily going to hold that against Sue Minter. They are, though, probably more likely to be subject to the forces behind the phenomenon that we have in Vermont that sees voters tend to go from one party to the other when we have open seats for governor. You know, Sue Minter is her own person. I think she's done a pretty effective job conveying that, despite efforts by the RGA otherwise. And voters have a relatively clear choice before them if they're going on the issues, and that is what do you want the role of government to be in your life? What role do you think government should play in alleviating some of the ills that plague our society in Vermont? And if you think that government should intervene in direct and substantive ways in those problems, then Sue Minter is probably your person. If you think a hands-off approach that tries to give businesses the regulatory and tax freedom to let the free market economy work its magic, then Phil's your guy.
Well, one key issue in the race is the subject of taxes. Republican Phil Scott says he will not support any increase in taxes or fees in his first term as governor. But Sue Minter says it's irresponsible to make that kind of pledge.
I believe that the taxing capacity is at the end of its ropes. I don't think there is more taxing capacity or none that that Vermonters can withstand.
I'm not making a pledge, especially not knowing what's coming. Imagine if we had such a pledge in Irene. We don't just turn our eyes to what's happening. We address them.
Phil Scott has also accused Sue Minter of supporting a regional carbon tax. Neil, taxes in this campaign, a pretty clear definition?
You know, it's tricky when you talk about taxes and exactly what you mean. I would say that making any type of pledge, I will not raise taxes or I will raise taxes, it's probably not the smartest thing to do for a politician or a candidate because, as Minter noted, you don't know what's going to happen. You don't know what the state might be facing next year or 2 years from now. There is a clear message here, though, from each candidate on how they would approach taxing. You know, we've heard Phil Scott say, I will not raise taxes, which means more likely than not, he will have to find places to cut government, which he has repeatedly declined to do or say where he would find savings throughout this campaign. On the other hand, Minter may, in fact, raise taxes, but we don't know which ones or how much. She's mentioned a couple of potential services that she says impact really the wealthy or corporations. But we don't know how far that goes, and there have been very few specifics from either on these pledges that they've made.
Terry, how big an issue are tax increases or fees in this campaign?
It may be the biggest issue. You know, it couldn't be clearer. I mean, there's a number of issues on which it couldn't be clearer between the two of them. But the totally different approaches. And as Neil said, they've both been vague about how you're going to do that or, you know, how are you going to pay for your programs? What taxes are you going to raise? Sue Minter not willing to say and has sort of deftly skirted that answer. But how do you keep from raising taxes and what do you cut? Also, as Neil said, Phil Scott not telling us as a candidate probably would never do, here's what I would cut because that would immediately create a constituency for that item.
Two other key issues in the race are efforts to raise the Vermont minimum wage and provide paid family leave to all Vermonters. Sue Minter says she strongly supports both of these proposals. Phil Scott says these issues are well-intentioned, but in the end are unaffordable for the state of Vermont at this time.
Too many Vermonters are struggling two and three jobs to make ends meet. They can't afford childcare. They can't afford college. And Vermonters need a raise. And we are moving in that direction. States around us are moving in that direction. My goal is to get to $12.50 by 2018 and then build gradually up to $15.
We're trying to force the legislature and those that want higher minimum wage. They want paid family leave. They want all these things, but they're not looking at how do we pay for it and how do we have an economy that sustains that. without strangling ourselves in the meantime.
Pete, this really speaks to the comments you just made about how active do you want government to be to make change in social policies, doesn't it?
Yeah, and you know, you can look at issues like this and begin to understand how stark the difference is between the path that Vermont goes down depending on who wins this election. Now, government is a freight train in a lot of ways, right? And to some extent, it doesn't always matter who's at the head. It's going to creep along and do what it does. But on an issue like minimum wage, let's just take that. Sue Minter wants to make it $12.50 an hour by 2018. That's $2 more an hour than it would be left unchanged. It's going to be going to $10.50 if we do nothing. That's $4,000 a year for a full-time minimum wage worker starting in 2018. That's $4,000 in household income that you might have because Sue Minter is elected governor, or you might not have because Phil Scott is elected governor. That's also potentially $4,000 more per employee in payroll costs that you're going to face as a business owner or an employer, depending on whether Phil Scott wins the election or Sue Minter wins the election. So there are these huge differences in policy that we can look to that just show how significant the stakes are in this race.
And this might be – this issue might be a microcosm for the campaign as a whole in terms of who both of these candidates are speaking to. Sue Minter, particularly on this issue, is looking at low and middle income Vermonters who are looking at their take home salaries and wondering why they can't get ahead, why they're struggling. Phil Scott, meanwhile, is looking at the small business community and hearing them say, we don't know how we're going to factor in higher wages for our employees based on the revenues that we're taking in. So they are essentially talking to two different groups of people in this issue and perhaps in this campaign.
Today in the program, we're taking a look at the people and issues of this year's campaign. With us today, Neil Goswami, Bureau Chief at the Vermont Press Bureau, Terry Hallenbeck of 7 Days, and VPR's Pete Hirschfeld. Your thoughts, 1-800-639-2211. Let's talk to Craig in Wells. Hi, Craig. Welcome to the program.
Hi. So I have a comment, I guess, that'll set up a bit of a question for the panel, which is, although this race is clearly generating somewhat less undecided voters than the national race, I can tell you that as an independent voter and with a lot of independent voter friends, one way that the Democrats and Sue Minter have kind of shot themselves in the foot of it this year is on the issue of gun control, taking Bloomberg out-of-state money and pushing that issue has really alienated a lot of people in the independent section that would otherwise really support for social policy. So I'd be curious to hear the panel's thoughts on that, as mine are just anecdotal.
Okay, Craig, thanks for your phone call. Terry, Sue Minter basically saying we should have mandatory background checks for all gun purchases in Vermont.
Yeah, she's going where no candidate has ever gone in Vermont. It's always been a don't touch that topic issue. And so we will see if that comes back to bite her. I think it's, you know, the polls show that most Vermonters want background checks. The reality is, I think, that, you know, people who own guns don't want changes because it's sort of opening the barn door to further changes in their minds. So this is what, you know, as we said, there couldn't be sharper contrasts on each of the issues. And it is interesting that voters like the one who just called are still grappling with who to vote for despite the contrast, because I think no voter comes down on the same place on every issue, you know, and so they have to see how that fits in and sort of how they feel about each issue.
But for a single issue voter on guns, that person is going to vote. That much you can almost be guaranteed of. If they care enough about how a candidate feels on background checks or ban on the sale of assault weapons, to have that be the leading factor for them, then they're going to be at the polls. The question is, are there more in the group that's going to come out because somebody is – they feel threatened or are opposed to those additional gun control measures? Or are there more people in Vermont now who are going to be compelled to come out solely because a candidate supports those measures? And there's a growing force embodied by the organization Gun Sense Vermont that has done a good job convincing candidates that there is a net benefit to taking this stance. And we saw Sue Minter last night in the debate taking this head on. And in one of her questions to Phil Scott, brought up the issue purposefully because she thinks that this is going to be an electoral winner for her.
Neil, is this a watershed year for gun control discussion at the statewide level?
You know, it has the potential to be if Sue Minter gets elected and she moves forward and finds allies in the legislature that want to move forward on this issue. We're all operating basically on the latest VPR poll, which I think showed 84-86% support in Vermont for universal background checks. But the real question is, how motivated are those 84-86% of people? It could just be one of those things that they say, yeah, it's probably a good idea, but they're not going to go to bat for it in any real meaningful way. If that's the case, then we're probably not going to see any major changes to gun laws in Vermont, regardless of who wins the election. If, as Pete said, Gun Sense and others are boosting support and finding enthusiasm among those Vermonters out there that are in support of background checks, then we could see some action with a Sue Minter administration.
Let's go back to our callers and talk to Bob in Rutland Town. Hi, Bob. Welcome to the program.
Well, thank you. I guess I wanted to ask your panel, I followed most of the debates, and whether they'd heard from any of the candidates on the issue of ethics reform. Sadly, Vermont is still, you know, one of three states without, you know, conflict of interest laws, financial disclosure laws, and I was just wondering if they've heard that and as an issue. Thank you.
Pete, what do you think? Has that really come up as an issue very much?
Well, Bob, the fascinating thing is that you will not find a candidate running for office who isn't solidly in favor of ethics reform and coming up with all the measures that you just enumerated that are going to help us clean up government, improve transparency, and get rid of any chance of anything bad happening behind closed doors. When they become office holders, implementing that in reality seems to become much more difficult for them, and they aren't quite as motivated or committed to getting it done on a timetable that works for people in the public that want to see something like that. So all the candidates this cycle are talking a big game about ethics reform. The extent to which those positions are going to manifest in the form of legislation or executive action once they're elected remains to be seen.
Today in the program, we've got a reporters roundtable looking at the people and issues of campaign 2016. Our phone number, 1-800-639-2211. When we come back, we'll wrap up our thoughts on the governor's race and take a look at some other statewide races. This is Vermont Edition on VPR. This is Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. With me today, Neil Goswami, Bureau Chief at the Vermont Press Bureau, Terry Hallenbeck of 7 Days, and VPR's Pete Hirschfeld. We're looking at campaign 2016. Your thoughts, 1-800-639-2211. Just to wrap up our conversation on the governor's race, the future of Vermont Health Connect, the state's health care exchange, is certainly a key issue. Phil Scott says the program has had so many problems it can't be fixed, and the time has come to dump Vermont Health Connect and join the federal system. But Sue Minter says she's not ready to give up on Vermont Health Connect at this time.
Because there's still a lot of folks across Vermont that are having problems with Vermont Health Connect. It's a fractured foundation that isn't really ever going to be fixed from my standpoint. And I think it's time to find something that is fully functional.
That will incur more costs to Vermonters. I've heard somewhere in the range of $24 million, and I believe those are state dollars. And it will actually kick people off of their insurance subsidy.
So, Terry, have the problems at Vermont Health Connect come to symbolize perhaps some of the problems of the Shulman administration? The state government was unable to fix these initial problems. And at the time, Governor Peter Shulman really downplayed the extent of the problem. So how does this issue factor into the race for governor?
Well, I think it goes to trust. And if anything hangs over for Sue Minter and her party, it might be this of like, you told us you were going to fix health care and you created this thing that didn't work very well. But I think on this issue, as on others, both of the candidates have been a little vague. I don't think we can sit here today and know exactly what each of them is going to do to Vermont Health Connect, partly because that's unknowable. You know, they're going to have to get in there and figure out, is it possible to fix this thing? Is it possible to move to some other kind of exchange and not cost more than it would to stay where you are? Those are kind of unknown factors. So I think on this one, voters have to just judge who do they think is going to handle the situation better. I don't think that either candidate is telling us exactly, here's my prescription for fixing this problem.
So I'd like to ask all three of you, when all is said and done, what will be the key factors to determine who the next governor of Vermont is going to be? Neil, what do you think?
I think it comes down to turnout on Tuesday. We know that the Democratic Party has built up a pretty incredible turnout machine and has pretty solid infrastructure around the state to get their voters to the polls. Phil Scott is going to be counting on a large number of ticket splitters, those who will largely vote Democratic in all the other races and then cast a ballot for him in the gubernatorial race. If the Democratic Party can get its voters out to the polls, and we assume that the race was somewhere between the 1-point spread the VPR poll showed and the 7-point spread the CAX poll showed, then that's possible that Sue Minter and a strong Democratic get-out-the-vote effort could make up some of that ground. It's just going to be about whether or not Democrats get out and vote, I think.
Pete, what do you think?
Well, since Neil already took organizational apparatus, which is going to be an incredibly decisive factor in this, I think it's just the feeling that these candidates elicit in people's guts. How do they handle themselves? How do they come off to voters? When voters look at them, when they hear them, when they watch them, do they get a sense that this is somebody I can trust to make decisions on my behalf? Forget about the complexity of the issues or where they stand on different things. Most voters are only going to have passing familiarity, if any at all, with the policy differences. This is really going to be about, who do I trust more to hold this awesome power that comes with being the governor of our state? And the answer to that will be who they check the box next to.
Terry, what are your thoughts?
Well, yeah, I do think that in a presidential year, the Democrats have this momentum thing going. Bernie, in a Bernie Sanders year, that may be the more influential factor here, that he did finally in the last couple weeks of the campaign jump on the Minter bandwagon and go to bat for her. That's pretty powerful. And on the other side, you know, Phil Scott has better name recognition, has more of the, you know, he's run for statewide office 3 times before. People are used to him. So, you know, it's just a question of which one of those is stronger in the end.
Let's go back to our callers and talk to Ann, who's calling from Burlington. Hi, Ann. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thanks for taking my call. So I just want to say that I am so excited to be supporting Sue Minter. And you've talked about a few of the reasons, but one I'd really like to bring up is I just really appreciate her understanding of how important vibrant downtowns are and the infrastructure that makes possible walkable, bikeable town centers. I lived in Rutland County for years, and I just see such a difference when you focus on that sort of thing. And it's very important to Vermonters. And then one other area is we just have to have the kind of focus that she is going to put in and has talked about at in some detail about creating livable wage jobs and really making Vermont a place where middle-class families can thrive and survive, whether it be through minimum wage, time off for sick leave, early child care, or making college education affordable. So I'm very excited about her possibilities to really make change in Vermont.
Okay, Ann, thanks very much for your phone call. We got this email from Scott, who writes, "Thank you for hosting last night's gubernatorial debate. I was undecided before the debate, but decided that I will vote for Phil Scott. I'm definitely voting for Clinton for president. The decisive factors were the candidate's statements on industrial wind on our mountains and Sue Minter's more negative general tone." So a lot of different thoughts about what's going on in this campaign. Let's shift gears and take a look at the race for lieutenant governor. Vermont will be electing a new lieutenant governor on Tuesday. It's a race that features Republican Randy Brock and progressive Democrat David Zuckerman. Brock served one term as state auditor, several terms in the state Senate from Franklin County. He was also the GOP gubernatorial candidate in 2012. Zuckerman has a long career in both the Vermont House and Senate, and as an organic vegetable farmer is concentrated on agricultural issues. Neil, what are the dynamics of this race?
Well, if you thought the differences were pretty stark in the gubernatorial race, they're probably more so in this race. Randy Brock is a pretty buttoned up, serious Republican candidate who is focused on a lot of the same themes that that Phil Scott is. David Zuckerman may be the most progressive statewide candidate to be elected if he wins on Tuesday the state's ever seen. He would love to see marijuana legalization, something that Randy Brock is opposed to. In the past, he's really touted a single-payer healthcare system. He's sort of acknowledge that's not happening right now, so looking for perhaps incremental steps there. This is two gentlemen who really have different views on the world. The race has been somewhat negative in recent weeks. Randy Brock has come out with a couple of attack ads trying to knock Zuckerman down a peg or two after the VPR and WCAX polls showed him with a wide lead. So this one is not apparently, according to the polls, as close as the gubernatorial race. But, strange things do happen on election day sometimes.
And as you mentioned, Neil, the legalization of marijuana is an issue in this race. David Zuckerman is a sponsor of a legalization bill, but Randy Brock opposes it.
We have a problem about highway safety in terms of the potential of impairment. The economic numbers that we've seen, frankly, do not make sense. It's like pouring gasoline on a raging fire. And lastly, it's still against federal law.
I've been a longtime advocate for bringing our underground economy above board in a regulated manner. It will mean cleaner product. It will mean keeping it out of the hands of our children better than we have in the model of prohibition. It will mean resources for particularly education and prevention, as well as treatment of our opiate addicts, as well as others. It's a health issue, not a criminal issue, and it could actually be an economic development issue as well.
Terry, how does this issue help define this race?
It characterizes all their different stances. David Zuckerman is one of the leaders of the Progressive Party. He's, been on the forefront of some of the most progressive pieces of legislation that have passed or not passed in Vermont. And Randy Brock is not—he's not the most conservative person you could find to run for that job, certainly. But he is much more of a, we don't— want these kinds of policies, whether it's GMO labeling or, paid sick leave or paid family leave. All of that kind of thing is just a contrast between the two.
Pete, you mentioned that even in the gubernatorial race, perhaps people aren't focusing that heavily on issues. It may come down to other issues. How about the race for lieutenant governor? What are the factors that people are going to consider when they go to vote?
Well, I mean, a lot of the same factors are going to be at play in that race as in the governor's race. People will likely have even considerably less familiarity with where the voter stands on issues for the down ticket races, as they customarily do. But you, again, as Neil said, you have a really stark contrast. And for David Zuckerman, this is the culmination of decades of grassroots politicking that began in Burlington, that has sort of came to a head this cycle when he got his endorsement from Bernie Sanders. He's sort of this case study of what can happen when a progressive harnesses the Democratic Party apparatus in a way that endears himself to Democrats. You know, certainly there's still some tension there, but you know, he's going on statewide tour with the Democratic ticket, and everybody seems to be getting along. Sue Minter throws shout outs his ways with real frequency. And, you know, there was this moment during their debate on VPR when Dave Zuckerman was talking about the need to increase the minimum wage as a vehicle for improving the lot of low-income working Vermonters. And Randy Brock said, look, you don't like your situation? Work. Work yourself out of it. Do what you need to do to improve your station in life if that's what's important to you. And let's make sure that we have as few government and bureaucratic hurdles in your way as you try to do it. And it sort of crystallized for me the two different worldviews that these guys come to the table with. And David Zuckerman sees a real strong role for government in raising wages, in providing health care, and making sure that people have access to child care and other, you know, things you need to get through life. And Randy Brock is more of a self-reliance guy and says, look, you know, people are strong enough to do this on their own. If only we create an environment that allows self-reliance in the market to let it be so.
Let's go back to our callers and talk to Raphael in Barrie. Hey, Raphael, welcome to the program.
Hey, how you guys doing there?
Great. What's on your mind today?
Okay, what I'm on my mind is, I think, you know, a big point you guys are missing is this election, I am a blue-blood Democrat, big D, but I'm going to vote straight up Republican up and down the ballot, because the reason I'm doing that is a vote. It's not because I don't like the Democratic Party. It's because I, deep inside, I believe that party is corrupt, is dirty, and we want somebody to come and make mega, mega reform in the whole system. And once we take side, I talk to many of my friends, it's a vote against the system, against the media, because we want some big time mega reform on the media, because you guys also are compromised. The justice system is compromised. We want state attorney general down the block that's going to be able to take case, because we cannot wait to see Hillary Clinton in handcuffs and get the mugshot for the crime she has committed, because that system is designed for no one is above the law. And you guys are making a mockery of the justice system.
That's okay, Raphael, I think we got your point of view, and there are a number of people who agree with you and certainly a number of people who would strongly disagree with what you're saying. Neil, we did get this email from Tom who wrote, it seems that media coverage is overwhelmingly about the horse race. What do you think it would take to change that and have a much larger discussion of the policy issues that will actually affect people's lives? Now, I don't know if Tom is thinking more about the national race, which really a lot of that coverage is national polling today. Who's ahead? Who's behind? How much has it changed in the last 12 hours? Do you think the Vermont media does a better job looking at the issues and staying away from that horse race?
Well, I'd like to think so. But, you know, the frustration or the concern that Tom raises is, I think, one that a lot of people feel, especially at the national level. You know, if you turn on any cable news program, you're going to see the latest polls and who's winning and who's ahead. Here in Vermont, I think we have far less polling. At best, we get two per cycle if we're lucky. And I think what I try to do and what most of us try to do is take the policies that are being discussed by the candidates and sort of run it through the filter and see where that is leading candidates and where they're gaining support or where they're not getting support. Look, the bottom line of a campaign is to win an election, and to not talk about who's ahead or who's winning or who might win is just irresponsible, in my view. Voters need to know how these policies are impacting the race.
And I completely empathize with the writer's frustration. And what I would suggest trying is curating your news feed. There's a lot of great work being done out there, both locally in Vermont and nationally, on some really issue-oriented, in-depth, investigative work that people are doing on the issues that matter. And it is easy to get caught up and overwhelmed by the noise. But and this isn't to try to excuse all the faults that the media has, which are many. But if you look hard, you can find some really good work that's being done right now.
Today in the program, we're looking at the people and issues of campaign 2016. When we come back, we're going to take a look at the race for the U.S. Senate. This is Vermont Edition on VPR. This is Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. Today we're recapping campaign 2016 with Neil Goswami, bureau chief at the Vermont Press Bureau, Terry Hallenbeck of 7 Days, and VPR's Pete Hirschfeld. Your thoughts, 1-800-639-2211. We're going to look now at the race for the U.S. Senate. 7-term incumbent Patrick Leahy is seeking an 8th term in office. His Republican challenger is Scott Milne, the party's unsuccessful candidate for governor in 2014. Milne has had one central theme in his campaign, and that is that Leahy has been in office way too long and represents everything that is wrong with politics in Washington. Meanwhile, Leahy has criticized Milne for running a negative campaign.
First of all, I think what's gone wrong in Washington over the last 50 years is this deadly concoction of career politicians being propped up election after election by special interest money. My election will be a message from Vermont that we're sick and tired of the way things are going in Washington. We need to have a government of the many, not for the few.
Instead of just going on a negative campaign saying everything I'm against, I can talk about things I've done and I'm for. But I'm not in a time of Citizens United, which apparently my my opponent supports a man who would maintain it. I'm not going to unilaterally disarm.
Terry, what do you think of Milne's strategy to tie almost every issue to this theme of campaign finance and Leahy's tenure in office?
Well, it's a tricky line to walk. He's trying to keep it simple to say, look, you know, and it would send a powerful message for those who are angry at government to oust the longest serving senator in the whole chamber. But the flaw in the argument is, well, what would you do on issue X, Y, Z? And he will answer. Scott Milne will answer each of those as you bring them up. But, you know, he keeps bringing it back to, well, the focus is Senator Leahy's been there too long and the system is corrupt. So I think most voters want to know a little bit more about what their person would do, as well as why they shouldn't vote for the other person. So that's the flaw.
The other problem, I think, with Scott Milne's approach is that his critique has merit, right? I think there are a lot of people that observe the political system and say there is good reason for the public to have some real concerns with the role of corporate money in our electoral process, in the influence that special interests are able to gain through that money. But there's no smoking gun here that suggests that Senator Patrick Leahy has engaged in some kind of quid pro quo. Does he charge lobbyists $5,000 a pop to go on a cruise on Lake Champlain? Yeah, he does that. Has he accepted over $1 million in PAC money from corporate interests this cycle? Sure. But there's nothing that Scott Milne can point to that shows here's how these things resulted in a vote that was not in the best interests of Vermont, in a vote that was motivated solely because of the financial stake that these corporate interests have in him. And I think without that, it's tough to find the gunpower in a message like this to take out somebody as popular and as long-serving as Pat Leahy.
And yet another hurdle for Mr. Milne is that, yes, Americans and Vermonters tend to look upon Congress with a you know, with a very dim view. But we tend to think it's everyone else's congressman or senator, and we tend to think our own aren't the problem. So Milne really is up against these real big firewalls that Leahy has working on his behalf, and it's a tall task.
Let's talk to Ken, who's calling from Newfane. Hi, Ken. Welcome to the program.
Yeah, thank you. You know, I listened to the Vermont Edition debate, you know, with Leahy and Milne, and I just didn't get the feeling that Leahy was completely engaged and completely on top of his details. I sensed a little uncertainty. In other words, he hadn't been doing enough in ways of debate with his opponent, and I think a more savvy Republican candidate, you know, could shake him in a future election. I just wasn't feeling completely confident listening to Leahy that he had really been practiced on the trail. And, I wasn't completely confident with what he was saying.
Okay, Ken, we appreciate your phone call very much. Terry, as we've been discussing here, Pat Leahy is very popular in Vermont. Was this going to be a very difficult race for almost any Republican challenger?
Oh, absolutely. And I do think, like, that the ground was there to be toiled because there are flaws. You know, like, if we're going to have a system that we feel like is corrupt, then you have to start blaming the people who are part of that system. So, you know, if he has $6 million when he's never really had a strong opponent, maybe that's a wrong world, even with Citizens United. So there are valid points to be made and valid concerns, but it was going to be a tough hoe for anybody against. And to the caller's point, next election, that's 6 years from now, with Senator Leahy would be in his 80s. Maybe that one would be there will be easier territory there for the next person.
Neil, I want to just look at the State House for a moment. Democrats hold big majorities in both the House and the Senate. Do you see these numbers changing very much after Election Day?
Not really. Joe Benning, the Senate Minority Leader, tells me they have 9 Republicans in the Senate right now. He essentially said his best case scenario is to maintain 9. Maybe if they're lucky, they'll pick up one here or there. In the House, Minority Leader Don Turner currently has a 53-member caucus. He thinks they can pick up 6 to 8 seats, which seems on the optimistic side to me here in Vermont. But should they do that? Should they get around 60? If they work with some independents and moderate Democrats, they tend to make things a little bit more tricky for the Democratic majority. But, you know, 6 to 8 pickups in the House for Republicans seems optimistic.
The partisan dynamic in the Senate and the House is going to have a lot more to do with who wins the race for governor than it does with who wins House and Senate races.
Terry, it's generally expected that Democratic presidential candidate Hillary Clinton will do very well in Vermont and certainly win. But I guess the question is there this big Democratic wave that's about to hit, and will it influence other races, probably most notably the race for governor? Will Vermonters engage in a fair amount of ticket splitting? I think Middlebury College retired political science professor Eric Davis has said that if Phil Scott wants to win, he's got to win about a third of Hillary Clinton's supporters. Do you see that happening?
It can happen still, yes. I do think that the Hillary Clinton factor is a piece of this, that how much enthusiasm voters have for going out and voting for her will dictate potentially who wins the governor's race. And that's what Patrick Leahy, Bernie Sanders, and Peter Welch are out there trying to do, is make sure that lack of enthusiasm for Clinton doesn't hurt the party. If all those voters who are, I don't have it for Hillary and I don't have it for Trump, I just don't think I'm going to vote, prevail, then Phil Scott has a better chance of winning.
We're almost out of time, Neil, but some people are talking about at the presidential level writing in Bernie Sanders in Vermont.
Yeah.
And he could actually do better than the other independent candidates.
You know, it's possible. The polls have showed us there are a number of people who are still either undecided or thinking of someone beyond Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. I'm sure we will see a fair number of Bernie Sanders voters, but I don't think it's going to get to a level where it starts to impact much.
I think a lot of people are very glad that Election Day is around the corner. We'll soon know the results of many key races. Many thanks to our panel today, Terry Hallenbeck, Neil Goswami, and Pete Hirschfeld. We really appreciate it.
Thanks, Bob.
Great to be with you.
And if this year's election season has you feeling anxious, you're not alone. On the next Vermont Edition, we'll talk with psychologists about election stress and anxiety, where it comes from, and what you can do about it. Send your questions and comments to us at vermontedition@vpr.net, and then join us Monday at noon. Vermont Edition is produced by Rick Sengary, Sam Gale Rosen, and Meg Malone. Mary Williams directed the program. Our executive producer is Patty Daniels. I'm Bob Kinzel. Have a great weekend.